Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, we can certainly see that Charles Darwin's ideas and his influence has been very far-reaching, as we were talking about with Dr. Tom Frame. Not just simply the physical sciences has it affected, it's jumped out of that. It's then affected psychology and sociology and economics and political theories and ideologies. And of course we had that horrible thing, social Darwinism, or as Tom called it, Spencerism, where we start to say, as the Nazis did, there's a particular race of people that we need to eliminate from the gene pool and make us all better. Horrific stuff. But there are lots and lots of people, lots of committed Christians, very highly respected theologians like Tom, a number of people that hold to an evolutionary understanding of the world, even though they're Christians, and they say God used that as a tool to create the world. There are others who aren't comfortable with that, who aren't comfortable with Darwin's ideas, and indeed question the science behind them. There's a number of people, not just Christians, and not just certain Christians, by the way, but there's other religions as well that hold that God actually created the world in six literal 24-hour days. It's kind of a literal understanding of the Genesis accounts, that first book of the Bible. Among those who hold that view is Dr. Carl Wieland, who's the Managing Director of Creation Ministries International. Carl, welcome to Open House.
Thank you.
Yeah, wanted to get you on board there to have a voice as well into this whole area. Now, we don't want to have a debate because one of the sad things is that this whole area can get quite nasty in a sense that both sides can throw, I guess, lob grenades at the other. We don't want to do that.
Look, I understand that.
And
I've had some email correspondence with Tom, and he's a really nice guy, and I'm not going to lob any grenades at him.
No, we certainly feel confident about that, and that's why we got you on air, really. What I want to do is do two things with you. I want to explore the scientific reasons why you and your colleagues are not convinced about the evolutionary approach to the world's origins. And then I want to look at your understanding of the biblical accounts. Just scientifically then, four or five points. What are the big scientific reasons that you say you just can't hold to it?
Before, I can understand why you want me to sort of answer in that way, but, before we can talk about science says, or like Tom said, I read the science and this is what I became convinced of. Look, at university, all the way through university, I was an atheist because that's how I read all the science. That's how I understood it to be telling me that evolution was a fact, etc., etc. And so the history in the Bible, on which the whole background of the gospel depends, the whole foundational logic of the gospel, if you like, the origin of sin and death and so on, it just couldn't be right. But the difficulty was that I wasn't able then, and it's not easy, to distinguish between the sort of science that sends rockets to the moon and, the practical experimental science, which we all think is fantastic and works and is real and so on, which is how the world works. And if you like, the sort of science that you have to use when you're looking at the past, whether that's archaeology or forensic science like CSI,
mm-hmm.
or what happened as far as origins or the history of the world, etc. And it's really a different scientific approach. And it's like looking at all the clues, scientific ways of gathering those clues, but then they don't speak for themselves. You've got to interpret them in some sort of a framework, and that's just the way it works. And that has to start with some sort of foundational beliefs. And, if you don't at least try the experiment of putting on Bible glasses, if you like, and saying, well, assume the Bible is right mm-hmm. in its basic history.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about the origin of a good world, cursed because of Adam's sin and the death and suffering and all those bad things. They weren't there for millions of years before people. They came about because of Adam's sin. Death is the last enemy in the New Testament. And it's going to be restored because that's what the gospel's all about, ultimately.
Mm.
Now, if you assume that's true for the sake of the argument and that there was a worldwide catastrophe that just reworked the earth at the time of Noah and so on, then all of a sudden, the same facts make a whole lot of sense in that different framework.
Okay.
And we've just, in January, had a week-long conference down at Phillip Island, and we've had one of the world's leading experts on plate tectonics there. We've had a man who's a professor who taught at Cornell University for 25 years, a pioneer of gene engineering. And the sorts of things that they were explaining and the way the data makes so much sense in that biblical framework It's the same with the evolutionists, that they say, well, every year we're putting more and more pieces of the jigsaw together, But that's because each party is working in that different framework. Mm,
that's a very important thing that you've raised there. Yeah. It very much does come down to worldview, and often our worldview can blind us to things that are actually there that we should see. So with your Christian worldview glasses on then, what are you seeing scientifically?
Well, I see a world in which we see mutations. And by the way, Darwin didn't know about mutations. That's something that's only come about in recent times, an understanding of genes and so on. I see a world in which there is natural selection, and I think, you know, Darwin was right about a lot of things. But to say that natural selection can create all of this incredible information in the natural world doesn't make scientific sense, and it's not what we actually observe, because natural selection gets rid of information. And if you ask an evolutionist, they'll basically agree with that. They'll say that by itself, selection can't do anything. That's why you have to have mutations, copying mistakes in genes, happening at random, adding that extra information. But there's two points. Number one, we just don't see that happening. We see mutations, but as a whole, they are heading things downwards. Hmm. Even so-called beneficial mutations, like when a beetle with wings loses its wings on a windy island so that all of its offspring, you know, they carry that same mutation, so none of them can fly. Now, natural selection means that they'll have an advantage because they can't fly. They're not likely to be blown into the sea and drowned. So there you have mutation, you have natural selection, you know, classical, you know, neo-Darwinism. It's all correct. But what you actually see in that instance is the design engineering information, if you like, for wings being corrupted or lost. You don't see any hint in nature of how this incredible information that's coded on our DNA, if you like, you know, thousands of volumes of it in the human genome, there's not a hint of how these sorts of novelties could have arisen.
Mm. Okay, so you see it as a downward progression.
A downward progression. That, yes. You know, see, in our common experience, and that's what science really is, it's formalized common experience. As far as observation is concerned, you never see computer programs write themselves. And life is now realized to be much more than just physics and chemistry. I'm not saying there's anything spooky in living things, but what I'm saying is there's something non-material called information. As Professor Paul Davies has put it, life is mostly about software. And he asked the question, you know, how can dumb molecules write their own programs? Mm. And his answer is, and he's an evolutionist, and he isn't a Christian, and he said the answer is nobody knows. And in one other place, Professor Davies said that the reason is that there is no known law of science by which information can create itself. We can have computers programming other computers, which program other computers, which program robots to program a computer. But somewhere in that chain, at the very beginning, you've got to have intelligence operating.
Hmm.
And so we see the evidence of biology as incredibly consistent with the creation of vast storehouses of biological information, and that originated in the mind of God. Jesus Christ is called the Logos, the ultimate source of all information.
This is Open House right across the nation. Dr. Carl Whelan from Creation Ministries is with us. We're talking about the influence of Charles Darwin's theories. We've talked to Dr. Tom Frame just before this. We're getting a different perspective from Dr. Carl Whelan. Okay, so there's one idea that the mutation seems to be a downward thing. You're losing information when you actually have natural selection.
Yes, even if the mutation is beneficial, like in the case of the beetle.
Right, yeah, okay. What else do you see?
And I see that, for example, well, the main argument, do you mean in biology or in the world generally?
Just any science that leads you to say this is the reason why we can't accept the Darwinian theory holus bolus.
Any science. Well, for example, if I can just refer to the documentary film that we've just about got ready for later on in this year, for the Year of Darwin. We interview a whole number of experts, you know, creationists, evolutionists, ID people.
Intelligent design people,
Some leading science historians and things like this, and we hope that it's going to really cross over into the mainstream, and people will realise it's a balanced, fair and gentle approach. And also will provide a pre-evangelistic tool for people. But what it does, it doesn't go around Darwin bashing. It treats this complex individual with the respect he deserves, but it goes to the different parts of the world that Darwin saw, and it analyzes on sight, if you like, many of the evidences that Darwin saw. And he saw himself primarily as a geologist and not a biologist initially. Mm-hmm. And he carried with him a book, Lyell's Principles of Geology, which was written by a lawyer who actually set out to undermine the idea of the Bible as a way of understanding the history of the earth. And he said that, you know, things didn't happen catastrophically, they, as the Bible would indicate, but they happened slowly and gradually over millions of years and so on. And everywhere he went, Darwin was sort of unconsciously looking at everything through those glasses. And he was, you know, he'd see fossilized trees and he would interpret them as having slowly risen and fallen as the sea and the land rose and sank and so on over millions of years. When you actually go to see the same trees that Darwin saw, the same fossil trees, and you look at the bottom of the trees and you see that the roots are all torn off, those trees have been not growing in any sort of ancient soil. There's no fossil soil there. Those trees were clearly ripped off in a huge, you know, upheaval, perhaps a massive volcanic eruption, massive floods and so on, and were carried in place because all of their roots are torn off. Mm. And over we see the slow and gradual interpretation that Darwin had, which was so important to his idea of millions of years, which, you know, reinforced that idea. And evolutionary experts themselves say it was crucial to his understanding of biology.
Okay, so he was
gave enough time for things to make themselves.
He was reading books that were giving him lenses, so to speak, to read the data through.
Well, in fact, from a very early age, he had his grandfather's book, Zoonomia. His grandfather actually had a very well-developed theory of evolution. So the idea, you know, there's a lot of myths around about Darwin. For instance, there's this idea that he was just a kindly old, you know, a kindly Anglican vicar type who just happened to fall across some facts, and these facts convinced him of some totally different view. The fact is that he was soaked in the evolutionary ideas of his grandfather.
Well, Tom Frame was mentioning before that it wasn't necessarily his own idea. He actually did kind of adopt it and take it on from other people.
But that's correct, and I'm sure Tom's fully aware of that, but I think he's sort of trying to be a bit, I mean, as I said, we don't sort of Darwin bash, but I think he's trying to be a bit overkind to Darwin when he said that the racism and so on was not something that was intrinsic to Darwinism. If you read The Descent of Man that Darwin wrote, you know, he very much believes that there are superior and inferior races because, let's face it, if you think that the reason we have our differences, you know, among different groups of people is because we were separated by tens of thousands of years at which we were evolving separately, then because evolution has no fixed speed, it's obviously going to mean that one group of people is more or less evolved than the other. And in fact, that's exactly the conclusion he came to. And he believed that the Australian Aborigines were very much inferior. In fact, I'm not saying he was a nasty man. He was actually a very kindly man and didn't like mistreating people. In fact, he campaigned for the abolition of... But the logical, he was a very logical person, and the logical consequence of his theory was that there are different...
Yeah, okay.
You know, in fact, the subtitle of his book is called something about the favoured races.
Mm. Now, let's just talk about the science again, because, because a lot of people will say, well, let's go to the fossil record. We go to the fossil record, and we show that it seems that there is an evolution from one species to another to another. With some gaps, yes, with some questions unanswered, and yet there seems to be this general trend.
I find that very difficult to accept at face value, because there was, a few years ago, there was a massive debate in evolutionary circles themselves, in the circles of fossil experts, about the different modes of evolution. You know, some were saying, well, look, we've got to face the fact. In fact, Stephen Jay Gould called it the trade secret of paleontology, that, you know, you just don't see this picture of a chain of fossils, the sort of thing that Darwin expected to find. And he and others, and I'm not saying that they aren't evolutionists, I'm saying this is a typical example of where evolutionists maintain the faith that evolution did happen, but they argue among themselves as to how it happened, and then they get very angry when we turn around and say, well, hang on, guys, have you considered the possibility that maybe the whole faith is up for grabs? And they had this new idea called punctuated equilibrium, which was said to be, and I believe is, a more accurate description of the fossil record, which says that the main characteristic in the fossil record is not change, but stasis, things staying the same, you know, suddenly appearing in the record, suddenly disappearing in the record, if you take that record as a series of long ages. Now, you know, I would say this: if people look, for instance, at our website, and called
Creation on the Web.
Yep, creationontheweb.com, or like just the first word .com. Then, and they can look up in the Q&A section, for example. But I'll find a wealth of information on all of those sorts of issues. For instance, the DNA comparisons in different things. Obviously, a chimp's got a more similar lifestyle to us than an elephant does. It's obvious that an elephant's not going to be not going to have as much DNA in common with us as a chimp does. But to talk about the fact, as some people do, that because a chimp might have, say, 95% of its DNA in common, that therefore, you know, it's 95% human, it's interesting that we share about 50% of our genes with bananas. But that doesn't make bananas 50% human.
Human, no, that's right, okay. All right, we'll leave it there, Dr. Carl Whelan. Thanks for your time. Creationontheweb.com is the website for a little bit more delving into yours. And then you were mentioning that film that you're bringing out. What's the name of the film?
Well, it's designed for broadcast, but we have it with some buyers at the moment, and if we can, I hope you don't mind if I keep the title under wraps till March.
Okay, sure.
But
sure.
One thing we didn't talk much about is the Bible, which is a pity.
Yes, well, just give me, literally, I'm 2 minutes overdue, so just give me then in 30 to 60 seconds, why then, I mean, to some degree you've actually already answered it, but then why you actually hold then that...
Because it's very clear, and it's always been the historical position of the Church, that Genesis was written as history. It's the way the Lord Jesus took it, it's the way the New Testament writers took it, and it's only after these ideas of millions of years and so on became popular that people started to say, well, maybe there's something else that it means, and then that didn't work, and so most people sort of have fuzzy ways of looking at it and saying, well, it's got a different purpose, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, if it's written as history, if that's the genre, not poetry or anything like that, and we have a booklet called 15 Reasons to Take It as History. And that's very cheap and very small and very easy to read. And it's very difficult to escape the force of the logic. And I think that atheists generally would agree with us.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your time. It's good to talk to you.
That's a pleasure.
Dr. Carl Whelan from Creation Ministries International there.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.